Well, Lenzeem, you can tell it's Memorial Day and weekend in the Chicagoland area because the weather has turned for the worse, and it has not been a great day to play golf out at the Glen Club for the Korn Ferry Tour and the Evans Scholars Invitational. Hopefully, things will get better over the next couple days, but right now, the weather reports are a little bit bleak. However, the good news is the players that went out early this morning got most of their round in before the winds got up near 30 miles an hour and before the rain started. And North Brooks, Nick Hardy, the U of I alum, 7 under par 64, and just seemed to have everything going his way today. I got a chance to watch him play the last four holes, and Nick really looks locked in and is on his game at this point.
Yeah, I tell you, this could really be a breakthrough for Nick. One real good showing, one good win would virtually assure him, I think, of a PGA Tour card. Although right now he's in very good position to get one. I mean, he's number 14 and the top 20 on the point list there with the Korn Ferry Tour, and then the top 25 automatically get that card. And there's only, I think, 12 tournaments left. Other than in addition to that, there'll be the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, which more cards are given out there. But this could be a really, he had a great start with an early tee time. I know the weather's supposed to be bad a little from Nick tomorrow on, and so that might be a little difficult for Nick. But he's off to a good start. Vince India off to a good start. Those are guys who really know the Glen Club. This could be a big week for both of them.
Well, I talked to Vince India and Patrick Flavin, and, you know, Vince India is tied for fourth. Patrick Flavin is in 14th place. They all played this morning and got a majority of their round in before the weather started to change. And, you know, that was my question for both of those guys today. You know, they always say it's nice to come back to a course you know, but for those guys, it's not a matter of they've played there before. They've won there before. And mm-hmm. So they know what it's like to carry a trophy out of that place. And Vince India recounted a little bit about his final day at the Illinois Open. And he said, yeah, I was playing in a pro-am this week, earlier this week on Tuesday with Andy Michelson from Mistwood Golf Club. And he said, we started talking about that final round because he goes, Andy was in contention as well. And he goes, we had a fun time reliving some of those memories. But, you know, I asked Vince, I said, we saw you play out here on the Korn Ferry Tour a couple years ago when the event was first held at the Glen Club. And I said, you look like such a better player, so much more refined than when we saw you in the Illinois Open. And I said, how do you feel your game has grown? And since then, even 2 years ago, since the Glen Club. And Vince said, whether it's been getting in the weight room and just doing a lot of other things, he feels he is a much better golfer than when he won the Illinois Open, and believe when he had a pretty decent finish in the inaugural Evans Scholars Invitational that was played at the Glen Club 2 years ago. So I think he's hoping that he will end up on the PGA Tour next year as well.
Well, you know, I think that they both, it'd be great to get them through the Korn Ferry Tour, onto the big tour. One thing about the Korn Ferry Tour that has been a disappointment to me is that, and it's not really with that tour as it is with, Golf Channel or the powers that be that determine TV coverage. A big thing with the Korn Ferry Tour and the Symetra Tour for the women, those are very good players trying to make it in professional golf, and they're not getting the exposure, especially the Korn Ferry guys who used to be getting some kind of TV coverage most every week. There's been very, very little for the Korn Ferry Tour, and I don't know that there's been any for the Women's Symetra Tour. I don't know what's going into the thinking there, because, I mean, we're seeing more European events that there has to be, I think, for the audience of Golf Channel, more interest in those two development tours than there would be in a lot of the events from overseas. So I wanted to voice that frustration. I hope that before the year's out, we get to see some of the play on both the Korn Ferry and the Symetra Tours.
And I'm sure you're thinking this way too. And more often than not, it comes down to money. Mm-hmm. And is the golf play people like the Golf Channel getting paid to show these European tour events? Do they do it as a favor to the PGA Tour? You know, I would if I'm at the Golf Channel. If I'm not televising those events, you know, even if it's on tape delay later in the day, there should be a magazine type show for both the Korn Ferry Tour and the Symetra Tour every week.
I couldn't agree with you more. They deserve a place on there better than just of scoring leaders after each round. I wish that we could get that point across and see an improvement on that, because it was a good feature for the for American golf, but to see these promising young players who are just very close to being on the big tour get the exposure that they need. That's part of growing up, that they get some TV and exposure, and they just haven't been getting it this year.
Well, Nick Hardy was paired up with Illinois University alum Brian Campbell in the first round today, and the two of them seem to be talking a lot and laughing and having a good time out on the golf course, and it seemed to probably put Nick at ease. You know, Brian's one under par. He's tied for 28th. Also, Lena, a guy that you've caught up with several times, and I know he lives down in Florida now, but grew up in the Chicagoland area and in Glen Ellen, grew up playing at Village Links, Andy Pope. And Andy, as you pointed out last year, one of the success stories of getting into the U.S. Open by going through qualifying, and I talked to Andy about that today, and a week from Monday, Andy's going to go for it again. He's going to go to the qualifier up in New York and hopefully find his way into the field down at Torrey Pines. He tells me he's never played Torrey Pines before, so if he does get there, there'll be some learning to do on the fly, but he's going to give it another shot.
You know, Andy is quite an interesting history there. He went through the qualifying rounds to get into the U.S. Open 4 times in 5 years, and he made the cut twice. He has not really blossomed into a solid player on the Korn Ferry Tour. I mean, he's been a journeyman there at best, but he plays well in the U.S. Open eliminations. And, you know, there's upwards of 10,000 players nationwide who try to get into that tournament. And here Andy's made it 4 times. And last year, when they weren't going to have qualifying, I was part of a campaign for Andy to be given a spot in the field, and unfortunately he didn't get one. But, you know, I wish him the best again. I mean, he's been a player made for the U.S. Open, if not made for the Pro Tours quite yet.
Well, Andy was one under par today, and he's tied with Brian Campbell right now in 28th place. So it was good to see not only Nick Hardy and Vince India sort of leading the charge towards the top of the leaderboard, or at the top of the leaderboard in Nick's case, but, you know, Patrick Flavin, Andy Pope, and, you know, Brian Campbell, all under par and playing well today, considering the crazy conditions. And you can tell some of the players who probably live and have played a lot of golf recently in places like Florida, for one, Arizona, for two. And some of these guys, they didn't seem to be handling the weather too well today, which it was 56 degrees when I got to the Glen Club. It wasn't real bad. And then the winds picked up, and it was close to 30 miles an hour, according to Korn Ferry Tour officials, by 1 o'clock this afternoon. And just as I was wrapping up my last interview for the day, just after 2 o'clock with Patrick Flavin, the rain started to come down. And shortly after I got out of the parking garage over there by the Glen Club, it really started to come down. So I got to feel bad for the guys who had the afternoon draw this afternoon. First off, the temperatures dropped down into the 40s. The wind picked up into the 30s. And then the rain went from nothing to a few drops to coming down in buckets, at least for about 10, 15 minutes.
You know, that maybe be an advantage to this. We have such a good big flock of local players in the field there at the Glen, that people who are used to Midwest weather, maybe this is a good omen for them in this particular tournament. Although when you're a tour player, whatever, what be it the PGA Tour or the Korn Ferry Tour, you have to be encountering bad weather lots of times. I mean, it's part of the nature of the job. But, you know, that's an awfully good start for the Chicago contingent there to have the players up in good spots on the leaderboard after the first round of play. So we'll see where things go from here, and the weather is certainly going to be a big factor in it. But so far, so good.
Defending champion Curtis Thompson is in the field, and late here in round one, he went out backside first, so he has 2 to 3 holes left to play. On the front side, he is 1 over par through a completed 15 holes. So, well, Len, it's if nothing else, in spite of the fact the weather isn't great, it was just nice to see live golf back in Chicago. And there was a fair amount of people out there. I would say there was anywhere from 10 to 20 people following almost every group. You know, that's not PGA Tour numbers, but some of the other events, they really don't draw a lot of people at all. And I can verify that my headcount for Hardy's Army was up to 58 people on the 16th hole.
Well, yeah, he'd be a popular player with the gang from around there being so close. Living from the Glen, it was, I think, a good thing, a nice thing that there was a sponsor that provided complimentary tickets to various rounds of the tournament, which would ensure at least some semblance of a crowd gathering there. I think that helps that tournament a lot, because it's been a hard sell, I think, to get people there when it's not good weather, even though these players are good players. I mean, it's a lot of fun to really, if you're a real golf devotee, walk along with them and get up close and personal and see just how good they are.
Well, Len, I'm looking at the leaderboard right now, and good news, Brad Hopfinger is back to even par through 13 holes and tied for 38th place. So, again, the local players this week seem to be off to a good start, and if they can survive tomorrow, I would encourage people to come out all weekend if they have the time and the weather doesn't get any worse than today or what it could be tomorrow, to come on out and watch some of the local guys that are trying to make a run towards a PGA Tour card. They are playing some good golf, and I think maybe in some cases it's they're used to this type of weather, and maybe some of the field isn't.
Yeah, that's for sure, and I'm wondering how many of these guys, usually a few players from the Korn Ferry Tour, make it through U.S. Open qualifying, and you know that's coming up real fast. I mean, the locals have been going on for quite a while now. There have been 3 within the state of Illinois, and the tour players don't really need to go through locals, but usually the regional stage is where the actual berths at Torrey Pines are determined. So I bet you we're going to see a number of Korn Ferry guys playing at Torrey Pines. That's usually the case at the U.S. Open. And that kind of underscores the quality of play on that circuit, I think.
Well, it was good to also catch up with a member of Nick Hardy's gallery, Hardy's Army, his former teammate at U of I, Dylan Meyer, who is actually our guest celebrity golfer at Media Day for the very first Evans Scholar Invitational back in 2019. And he came up this week, attempted to Monday qualify into the tournament, and came up a couple of shots short. But he says he's been hard working back at home. He's going to spend more time using the University of Illinois facilities, golf facilities, when he can get back in there to do so. And he says his game is trending in the right direction, and until then, he's going to be going through a lot of Monday qualifiers. And he reiterated how tough it is to get into tournaments by going to these Monday qualifiers. There's a lot of good players, and they might go shoot 5 under par. You know, you go shoot 67 on a Monday qualifier and think you're in great shape, and then you find out there's 4 guys at 64 and 65 and 66, and you can pack up and go home.
Well, you know, Dylan was just a great amateur player, great collegiate player for the Illini. And sometimes a player just needs a little time to, the term is fair to say, but to grow up, to mature, to take that next step into pro golf. I think Nick Hardy, I think, would say that he benefited from having a year. He didn't qualify for the Korn Ferry Tour in his first run at it, but he grew from the experience. I think. I mean, he got into some tournaments. He won a mini tour event. He Monday qualified a few times in the PGA Tour, He had a good runner-up finish in the Illinois Open. So he was looking for tournaments. He found them. And I think he appreciated all the more the fact that he had the chances that he did get to compete. And I think that's probably played a role in him having such a good, what is officially his rookie season in pro golf.
Well, and I don't know how much of it you got to see on Sunday, but a lot of buzz yet still about the PGA Championship on the Ocean Course at Kiawah Island. I thought it was great drama, great golf, and a lot of people still talking about the fact that 50-year-old Phil Mickelson won the championship. Phil doesn't even need that exemption now because he's got one from winning to go to the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines next month. But whether it's the crowd gallery on 18 and the players trying to get through there, whether it's Phil winning at 50, or whether it's the simmering feud between Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau, I'll tell you what, there's still a lot of buzz going on about the PGA Championship.
The Mickelson win was, of course, a very popular one, but it really, the tournament he needs is the U.S. Open, because he's finished, I think, he's been a runner-up there numerous times, and he's not. It's the one major he hasn't won six times, and he's in a perfect situation at Torrey Pines, which is, you know, pretty much where he lives, where he grows up and grew up, and everything. That to go up and to get the job done in that tournament in June. As for this thing with Koepka and DeChambeau, it's a purely theater for the match that they're participating in with Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. I think it's kind of silly, but it is entertaining, and I know a lot of people are talking about it, and that's what they're doing. That's what they wanted it for. There's no question about that. But I don't know the whole thing. I think that's an awful lot of tongue in cheek and a lot of just for promotional purposes. I don't think there's really the serious bad blood in there that some want to believe.
Well, and you know what? Here's the thing. People are wondering if Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka are competing for a big slice of the pie. The PGA Tour was going to offer big money to these guys to be active on social media. And boy, that so-called feud of theirs, it's gotten a lot of play on social media, I'll tell you that.
That's exactly right. I tell you, I wondered about that decision the PGA Tour made to reward the guys who did the best for them on social media. And these two guys are certainly making hay with it right now. So maybe it's not just the match, the event called The Match, that's stirring this all up. Maybe they're trying to get a good slice of pie on that one.
Well, and I do want to emphasize that upcoming The Match, and I don't have any details as to where that money's going, if this is somewhat of a fundraiser for something. I believe the event's being played up in the Great Northwest somewhere, like Montana or Wyoming, Idaho, somewhere up that way. But just in case people have not heard, it is Phil Mickelson with his partner Tom Brady again on July 6th, which I believe is a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And their opponents will be Bryson DeChambeau and current Packer quarterback Aaron Rodgers. And, of course, the way that thing is going up there in Green Bay, we don't know if Aaron's going to be with the Packers next year. He says no. We'll see about that. But in the meantime, he's going to take some time to play golf and pair up with Bryson DeChambeau and go up against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady. And it should be a very exciting match. I'm sure with Phil's win combined with Bryson in part of this so-called feud and Aaron Rodgers having his own feud going on with the Packers and Tom Brady coming off of winning yet another Super Bowl, I got to believe the ratings are going to be outstanding.
Ratings will be good there, but you know, you and I, well, we're going to be that day. That's the first round of the Illinois Women's Open. We're going to be around. We've got a big local event here that day as well, so we can catch the highlights at night. I'm frankly right now. I saw the first version of the match, which fell at a good time because it was, you know, we were starting to come out of the pandemic, and the pandemic was this match was a good start to get you used to seeing live action in where near where I was living then in Florida at the time. But now it's time for the real serious golf to get going, and I'm looking forward to the Illinois Women's Open, a tournament that couldn't be played last year because of the pandemic. I'm going to looking forward to getting back to Chicago and seeing everybody there and starting to see that tournament and the John Deere Classic that week.
Was the match played at the Greg Norman-designed Hobie Sound course next to the Michael Jordan Grove 23 course?
Might have been at the Medalist. Yeah.
Yeah, the course in Hobie Sound that Greg Norman designed. I think that's where match one actually was.
And you know, you are right, because Dustin Johnson was playing in the first event there, and it wasn't the match then. It was, I think you're right.
Yeah, it was when they had Tiger and Phil over at the Greg Norman design course there in Hobie Sound called, yeah, I believe the Medalist. You are correct about that. You know, Len, this week you have to pick your brain, because a couple days ago the next class into the Illinois Golf Hall of Fame was named. And as an Illinois Golf Hall of Famer, what do you think about the six selections that are headed in this year on October 1st?
Yeah, you know, it was an interesting selection group there. They had 10 finalists, and the six that got in, I don't really have an issue with them, although one of them I really didn't know much about, Phelps, who had won two Western Amateurs. Don't know him.
Not the swimmer.
No, it wasn't the swimmer. But the I really thought it long overdue for Gary Pins. I mean, winning five Illinois Opens. No one else has done that. He played a little on the PGA Tour. He's been a very solid instructor. 27 years, I believe, at one course within the Chicago area. So he's done it all. He's been a good soldier for golf, a great player in his younger days. And I thought just great that he got in there. And of course, our friend Phil Kozen, he finally made it. I thought that was a guy that was long overdue to go in. And I especially for fun here, I wrote my piece for the Daily Herald on the selections, and the Herald found a great piece of art to run with it. They found the two, Bessie Anthony, who was just a legendary player in the early 1900s, the first great woman player. She was 19 years old when she was winning the Western Amateurs and the U.S. She was barely out of her teenage years when she won the U.S. Women's Amateur at Chicago Golf Club, beating another Chicago player, Anna Carpenter, to do it. So that was a really a rich moment in the history of golf in the Chicago area. And it took a lot of years for Bessie to make the crack the Hall of Fame, but she certainly had deserved to do it.
Well, Len, you and I at times, we've talked about equipment, new equipment coming out, who's making the splash, whether it's been local companies like Wilson or Tour Edge Golf, or sometimes what some of the bigger companies are doing. And my understanding is after the TV made such big notes on how Phil Mickelson's new Callaway Epic Max driver was having him be the long driver on a couple of the holes, driving it past all those young bombers, there's some talk about a run on that driver by Callaway. And, you know, as we talked about a week ago, Callaway, and I think like all the other companies are doing, some of the materials to make golf balls and golf clubs have been a little hard to come by, or their price has been going up due to demand. And you got to wonder if one of the stories we're going to see coming up is whether or not Callaway can keep in supply the Epic Max driver style that Phil Mickelson has been using, because I'm sure that there's a lot of golfers that would love to get their hands on that driver, especially guys like you and me who are over 50.
You know, you're right. That was one of the sidelights, and that it didn't get lost in the shuffle at all exactly, but Phil's long drives, longer than the real long drive hitters, that just came out of nowhere. I think that's going to do wonders for that club. But it was just surprising to see the results, because he was never, you know, in this day and age now, and at age 50, he was thought of as a player who could win, who was colorful, who was entertaining, but not one of the longest hitters. And here that week he was. So, yeah, I think Callaway's got a good thing going there. I know it's going to intrigue a lot of people, including me, although I know I wouldn't come close to hitting anything like that, but it sure makes me want to give them a try and see what they're like.
First one thought here, of course, Phil had a tailwind on a couple of those holes, and the wind can blow pretty strong there next to the ocean. And firm and fast fairways don't hurt either. But as you and I talked about earlier this week, you caught up with Northwest Suburban-based golf architect Mike Benkuski, most recently noted work here at Arlington Lakes Golf Club, also some work over at St. Charles Country Club. But he's got a project going on down in your neighborhood there of Sarasota, Florida. What can you tell us?
Yeah, this is interesting. I didn't know Mike until this week. I knew of Mike quite well, but not that we hadn't met head to head there. And so anyway, he has never worked on a Florida course. He grew up in Iowa. He's been an Illinois-based architect, and most of his work is pretty much Midwestern stuff. But he got the call. He got a recommend from somebody, and the people here at Palmer Country Club have brought him in. He's working on he calls it a hybrid. It isn't a renovation of a Dick Wilson course, because it's not exactly his own course either. But he took me on a long cart ride all the way around the course called the Champion there. And the Champion was opened in 1958. It was one of the very most difficult courses in the country, I'm told, the Dick Wilson design. Of course, Palmer has two courses. One was by Dick Wilson, one was by Joe Lee, and those two architects together back in the 60s created Dubs Dread at Cog Hill. It's a very interesting project. I'm going to be putting together a piece on Mike and what he's doing here in Florida, and I think it'll be an interesting reader for both the people in Florida and the people in Illinois, because it's really a different thing for Mike. And they're working on courses. He's working on courses that were put together by some of the great architects of the past from the Illinois area. So all in all, an interesting golf story in the works there.
All right, Len. Well, we are about out of time for this week, but we will look forward to checking in with you for volume 18 next week. And we'll look forward to catching up with you a little bit more on Saturday's edition of Golfers on Golf Radio, 4 p.m. tee time, AM 820 WCPT. Take care and keep warm.